Hi, I'm cooking up a fresh batch of my Sun Up Before Sun Protector. Last year, my family headed off to the sunny beaches of Riviera Maya for a much-needed vacation. But I knew I wouldn't enjoy myself if we were smothering our skin with ingredients that cause reproductive disorders, hormonal imbalances, even cancer. Kind of takes that feeling out of a beautiful day, right? Now you can make every beautiful day delicious to your skin by using Sun Up Before Sun Protector by Primal Life Organics.
Welcome back to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, and I'm excited today. We have a phenomenal guest on our show. His name is Cameron Harold. He is known around the world as the business growth guru. He's a mastermind behind hundreds of different companies' exponential growth, and Cameron has built a dynamic consultancy. His current clients include everybody from the one of the big four wireless carriers and a monarchy. And what do his clients say that they like most about him? He is not a theory guy. So, guys, that means we're going to get some action steps today, and Cameron's going to give you different ideas to move your business forward. Not only does Cameron know how to grow a business, but his delivery from on stage is second to none. The current publisher, Forbes magazine, Rich Cargland stated that Cameron is the world's best speaker that he's ever heard, and he hits grand slams. When Cameron steps off stage, he does not stop teaching. He is the author of the global best-selling business book, Double Double, that I've read multiple times, in its seventh printing and in multiple translations around the world. He's spoken in 26 different countries. He's also the top-rated lecturer at EO and MIT's Entrepreneurial Master's Program, and a powerful and effective speaker at Chief Executive Officer and Chief Operating Officer leadership events around the world. Cameron has multiple new business books coming out this year in 2016. One of his books, Meetings Suck, we're going to talk about a little bit later in today's episode. Cameron, welcome to Making Bank.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Cool. Well, one of the parts I left out talking about your bio is a little bit about your background and how you got started as an entrepreneur and one of the top companies that you built. So I'd like to kind of dive in, and it's more fun to hear it from your perspective than just Josh reading it. So tell us a little bit about how you got started.
Sure. So I'm actually probably most well known for building a company called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. But prior to that, I had built three other companies that I got well known for. One that a lot of your listeners may know of is called College Pro Painters. And I was on the leadership team of that company where we would have to literally build a 9,000 person company from scratch every year. College Pro is the largest house painting company in the world. Then I went on and did a private currency company, which we built and sold, and then Gerber Auto Collision and Boyd Auto Body, which is the largest collision repair chain. So I'd done those companies prior to starting as the chief operating officer at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and we took that company from, I guess when I joined, there were 14 people at the head office, and then when I left, we had 3,100 employees system-wide. We went from 12 cities to 330 cities, and we were in 46 states, 9 provinces, and 4 countries. So big growth. We gave up no equity. We were very profitable for every year of the 6.5 years I was COO, and just became one of the best companies to actually work for. We ranked number 2 to work for in Canada. So really strong, fun brand to grow.
Awesome. And that's, you know, so you have had multiple businesses since you were 21. I College Pro Painters, I remember, I always see their signs everywhere. And it, you know, and even it made it seem like it was a local business as well. Is that kind of how you guys?
That's really where I learned how to grow companies. That was what I would call my real world MBA, because we were literally, you know, the way it worked, where there were 60 people at the head office, and every year we'd have to go out and recruit 800 franchisees, and then they would have to recruit 8,000 painters. And then between May 1st and September 30th, August 30th, we'd produce $64 million in revenue. And then 9,000 people would quit and go back to school, and we would do it again.
Wow.
And actually, one of the franchisees that I had back in 1993 was Kimball Musk, who's Elon's younger brother. So
right.
I trained Kimball on his first business, and that's how they actually got funded for their first company, Zip2, was they backed College Pro Painters experience with Kimball, not Elon's vision.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, you have basically 3 months, roughly, to crush out business.
Yeah, and so we really couldn't make a mistake. We had 17 weeks, 4 months in total, and we would literally have to crush it during that period. So we would reverse engineer all of our goals. So we became really operationally excellent at recruiting, interviewing, selection, business planning, execution, operations, culture. So that's all the stuff that I now coach on, is because I've built companies following almost that College Pro Painters methodology.
So, and then, you know, as you guys were kind of building this and figuring it out, and obviously it wasn't an overnight thing, you know, how long did it take you guys to really come up and figure out these systems and the processes so it was just turnkey after that?
Sure. So I joined College Pro Painters in its 17th year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then when I left, you know, I'd been there for 7 years, so I left at year 24. They've been going now for another 20 since. So, you know, they're 44 years in business. So very, very strong operational brand, and they haven't changed much over the years. They don't need to. They really perfected that model, and probably because every year they had to do it again, you know, that you iterate and you just tighten it up every year that you're doing it.
Right. Okay. And so I guess, you know, since you started, that's where you started when you were 21.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. What kind of made that entrepreneur bug hit you? I mean, did you have plans before that, or was that kind of always in you, do you think?
I was always groomed to be an entrepreneur. My my father raised all of the three kids to be entrepreneurs. He was an entrepreneur, as was both of our grandfathers, and I even married into an entrepreneurial family. It's all I've ever known was how to be an entrepreneur. So, in fact, I actually did a talk that's on TED.com. It's been on the main TED site for about 5 years now, about raising entrepreneurial kids. So that was how I was groomed.
Awesome. No, and I remember your talk because I remember reading that, and I've read a bunch of books trying to figure out, okay, how can I groom my kids in that same perspective to be entrepreneurs, from my wife is an entrepreneur as well and myself. So definitely a good one to get out and listen to if you guys haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, it was just, that was where I learned a lot of my early kind of the nurturing towards being entrepreneurial and not seeing it as a risk, seeing that you have more predictability, control of your own cash flow, control of your own time. But again, I think the real business lessons came from College Pro, but then I was able to perfect them over time. You know, building 1-800-GOT-JUNK really gave us a good foundation, but I left there 9 years ago now as well.
Wow. Okay. So tell me along the way here as an entrepreneur, what was your largest mistake or business failure that you've encountered?
It probably would have been one of the times at 1-800-GOT-JUNK around the fifth year that I was there. We were very strong as a company. We were growing very rapidly. We were doing about 60 million at the time, and we were opening up corporate locations, opening up in Australia and the UK, opening in Quebec and Manhattan, moving into new office space. And our VP of finance said, you know, be careful, you're spending too much cash, you're going through it too quickly. And we're like, no, everything's fine. And we didn't understand the balance sheet. We didn't understand how to leverage the balance sheet and go to the bank for financing. So we spent cash for everything.
Okay.
And the way you build a very small business is you work with the cash that you have. But as you grow, you need to start leveraging a little bit. And we never leveraged. So when we all of a sudden needed money, we went to the bank and they said, well, you don't have any cash. And we're like, yeah, but that's because we just spent it on this and this and this and this. And they said, well, that was stupid. You should have come to us for a loan. And we're like, well, we didn't need the loan. So we just didn't understand. And we didn't listen to the head of finance, who was very quiet, very amiable, very analytical. So our styles didn't accommodate for him, and we didn't listen to him, and we should have. And that was a big lesson for me, is that we really have to use our two ears and one mouth in that ratio. You know, we have to listen twice as often as we speak.
For sure. You know, as a lot of our listeners have small to mid-sized businesses, you know, how do you know when that right time is to utilize that leverage in your business?
You're getting some good financial advice along the way. You know, I think you have to actually recognize that unless you have strong financial acumen as a CEO, that you really have to look for outside advisors to give you some mentoring along the way, whether it's from your board or mentoring or, you know, a casual person that you turn to monthly to get some financial advice. But you really can't and should not build every area of your business as the expert. You know, at some point you need to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you.
And that makes sense. And I think a lot of times in small to mid-sized businesses, with even the coaching I've done in the past, is they don't have – that's one piece they leave a lot out of, is that CFO or that person that has that financial experience, from what I've seen.
Yeah, a lot of entrepreneurs can't afford that level of person. You know, they can't afford the $250,000 CFO, so they end up having a controller that they give a big title to. And maybe what they should do is hire a controller and call them a controller and pay them $100,000 a year, and then get an interim CFO who can spend 4 hours a week looking at your financials, looking at your numbers, maybe coaching your controller for you so that you get the financial advice, but you don't need it full time. You know, and that's even the role that I play in a lot of the CEOs that I coach, is that they can't really afford to have a person like me, or do they necessarily need someone full time, but right. They almost can't afford not to, to leverage that when they get to a certain size.
Makes sense, for sure. I know, and we had picked up probably about 2 months ago, like an interim type CFO to help manage our financial side of things and figure out just the ins and outs of it, because you get so focused on building and growing, and you don't have that experience on that side of it as well. So,
awesome. Yeah, so it's just the recognition that it's good to have the advice, but it doesn't always have to be yours.
Yeah, and yours isn't always the best.
Yeah.
Cool. Can you stick around for a minute? We just got to take a quick break.
Absolutely, for sure.
I am Josh Felber, and you've been watching Making Bank. We'll be right back.
Now you can get your healthy superfoods in one drink with no shopping, no blending, no juicing.
I am Josh Felber. Welcome back to Making Bank. We've been speaking with Cameron Harold on where his background has come from as an entrepreneur, moving forward from college pro painters to 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And being able to grow that business from 14 people to over 3,000 people in the 7 years he was there. Cameron, welcome back to Making Bank.
Hey, Josh. Looking forward to the rest of the segment.
Cool. So we left off talking a little bit about knowing the numbers, making sure you have some key people in place at your business. What as you moved in and you guys broke through kind of that fifth year where was your biggest failure, you said. Tell us how, you know, I guess 1-800-GOT-JUNK became one of your largest successes.
Sure. We really focused on a couple of things that would drive the flywheel effect for us, and it was culture and PR were probably the two big ones.
Okay.
Culture was just all about attracting the right people into the company, getting rid of the assholes, getting rid of the jerks, really, really looking to attract and build this this amazing A-level team, and then also aligning them with our vision and where we were going, giving them the environment to work in. So culture is very much by design, and we figured out how to actually set up an amazing workplace culture. And it became like a cult. You know, business should be slightly more than a business, slightly less than a religion. It should be in that zone of cults that, and that's what we really worked hard towards. And the second one was PR. You know, we worked very, very hard to find a way to have the press chasing us down for stories, and for the press to open up to us when we called them and said, hey, we have a good story for you. And we landed 5,200 stories in the media about our company over 6 years. In fact, I've got one of my videos that people can download off my website, teaches them how to actually land PR. But that was a big focus for us as well.
And what did you, I guess, you know, when you're talking about building culture and creating culture within a company, what are maybe like 2 to 3 key pieces that, you know, small business owners, mid-sized business owners should look for or implement to really attract
sure.
that?
The first one is what I talk about in my book, Double Double. In chapter one of Double Double, I give them the concept of a vivid vision. We used to call it a painted picture, but that vivid vision is a 3 or 4 page written document that describes your company 3 years in the future in such vivid detail that everyone, the employees, potential employees, suppliers, customers, everyone can see what the entrepreneur can see. And then they can figure out how to reverse engineer that and make it happen. So that's the number one thing, is making sure everyone's literally on the same page. Number two is really trying to build out that A-level team of full-time, part-time, and contract employees, and even outsourced people that are going to help make that vision come true. So it's looking to get that A-level team to work towards it. And then it would be reverse engineering your goals, you know, really coming up with a solid plan that you can then brief, execute, and debrief on, and just going back to that mantra constantly of plan, brief, execute, debrief. So you're always thinking about the future, putting the right people in place, and then reverse engineering it and executing.
Awesome. And I remember from your book, in Double, you guys talked a lot about, all the employees, the kind, you know, people that you contracted, you know, everybody was sharing in that vision. They were sharing and creating, you know, I guess, and that's what helps, you know, cultivate the culture there.
Yeah. So the CEO actually writes and drafts the vivid vision. And then we do what we call the Can You Imagine wall, where we get employees to come up with the ideas that they can imagine. And we put those up on a big wall. And as each idea gets accomplished, we check them off. But the vivid vision is really the role of the entrepreneur to create. And then it's their job to make sure that the only people in the company are the ones that are excited about making that vision come true. So you one by one get rid of the people that aren't aligned, and one by one bring people in that are excited about making that vivid vision come true.
Really cool. And I know you mentioned PR as well. And if I recall from the PR, you got a lot of free PR that you were able to cultivate for 1-800 Got Junk. Tell us a little bit about how you did that and what, you know, some different strategies there.
Sure. So I cover that again in one of the chapters in Double Double, and then I had a video on my website that people can download that gives them a lot of detail. But in brief, I'll give you the three easy steps to free PR. The first step is to really know your angle, and it's to think about a couple of key story ideas that you might want to transfer that the audience will care about.
Okay.
The second one is to know your audience and to really understand the target journal or blogger or podcaster or radio or TV show or magazine or newspaper. You really understand who's viewing or consuming that content and why are they going to care about your story, so that you can kind of position it in a way that they'll receive it well. And then the third is picking up the phone. You know, people are literally overloaded with email and press releases and news wires, and all we did is pick up the phone and say, hey, do you have 2 minutes? And people are invariably going to say sure, because nobody's phoning them.
Right.
You cut right through to the decision maker and you say, I think I have a good story for you. Do you have 2 minutes? And they're always going to give you the 2 minutes. And then you literally just deliver the angle in a way to help them, because every journalist needs new content every day.
Right. Awesome. And that's, you know, I think you hit a key point, is people don't pick up the phone. And I know on some affiliate, we were working with some people to teach them about some affiliate stuff. And, oh, can't we email them? Can't we email them? Pick up the phone. They're the one. If you connect with them and talk with them, spend a couple of minutes, they're going to love you 10 times more.
Yeah, like you think, and that's just what works all the time. People won't do it. They'll go down the other path, but then they also won't land the 5,000 stories. So I've taught so many companies how to land the press. Tiny Pulse, Grasshopper.com, Achievers, I Love Rewards, you know, Media Temple. I could go on and on about the number of companies that I've taught how to land free PR to, and it's really powerful. In fact, one of my former PR people is now the head of PR worldwide for Sprint.
Oh, wow.
Like, this stuff
that's
really
awesome.
Works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Well, excellent. Well, I know you sent me a book, your new book, right, that just came out?
Meeting Suck. It came out about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, cool. I know. I was like, it was on pre-order, I remember, and then we talked and it came over. So, yeah, I would like to really dive into this. I just started reading it last week. And would really like to start to explore it and really understand, hey, you know, is this really the title? Is this what you're talking about? Or this is just our hook to get us in?
Well, the reality is that everyone walks around saying meetings suck. And the reality is meetings don't suck. We suck at running meetings. You know, we're just not good at running meetings. So if you run meetings properly, meetings are absolutely amazing. And the problem is we just don't train all of our employees how to attend them or how to participate in them or how to even lead or run meetings. So then we walk around saying meetings suck. So I tried to put together a book that was really tight, very concise, really power-packed with actionable tips so that people can literally take the ideas and put them in place. So the basic ideas are this. Every meeting has to have a clear purpose. Just the one sentence, why are we here? Second part is every meeting has to have a maximum of 3 outcomes. What are the 3 things that you're going to get done in the meeting? The third part is no agenda, no attenda. And what you want to do is put in place a process that when you're booking a meeting, it has to have an agenda in writing. You put it down, just bullet pointed out, what are we covering, in what order, and how many minutes are we going to spend on each agenda item.
Okay.
Every meeting has to start on time. And the only reason that people end up showing up late for meetings is we all kind of stack all of our meetings and phone calls together. So what we try to do is finish every meeting 5 minutes early. finish every phone call 5 minutes early, and that gives you time to actually walk down the hall, talk to your assistant, get your cup of coffee, and sit down and be on time for a meeting. So it's just that regular pulse of starting on time, stopping 5 minutes early, and then booking every meeting for half the time you first think about booking it for. So you're literally compressing time. So those are the basic tips. So I go into a lot more detail of the types of meetings to have, how to participate, how to lead them, communication styles. It's really kind of the Bible that all employees in all companies should be reading for sure.
And I know when I was looking through the book and kind of you had I don't think there was roughly 7 or 8 different types of meetings that I saw in there at least.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, how do you like, you know, because I know if a small business owner is reading, it's like, man, I would be in meetings all day, every day, all week. How do you suggest going about really dialing that in?
If meetings were amazing and if meetings actually got you results, people would want to spend time in meetings all day.
Sure.
Right? So it's a bit of a paradigm that if you're actually getting shit done with more people faster and meetings is the way that you do that, sign me up.
Definitely,
because right now everyone's just being busy working on busy work and they're really not getting the most impactful stuff done. So the reality is, yes, there's meetings, but they aren't actually as frequent as you think. The strategy meetings are only once a quarter.
Okay.
The strategic planning or strategic thinking meetings are only once a quarter. The financial meetings are a 1 hour meeting every month. And then it's really your daily huddle, which is a 7 minute meeting, and your one-on-one coaching meeting. So there's really not that much. It just seems like more.
Okay. Awesome. And I know what was interesting is hanging out with Gary Vaynerchuk for a little while. He, you know, in his Alex that schedules all his stuff, he had a lot of 5 minute meetings with his employees.
Yeah, you don't need to schedule things for a half hour or an hour. If you cut to the chase and you stay focused on the purpose and outcomes, then you can actually get stuff done in a little more time, a little less time. It's like a quickie. You can get it done if you need to.
Get it done quick. And you know, what's really cool is with some of this information here, and my wife was just talking about it the other day, and she was talking about the meetings and how they run 2 or 3 hours and everything else. And so I was like, you got to go read Double Double and then Meetings Suck. I got a copy for you. But
I think it's why I really wrote the book, was because I'm so tired of people complaining about them when they just don't know how to run them. You know,
right.
If you think about, has your wife ever had any training on running meetings?
No.
Probably no.
Nope.
And have your employees. So we would never send our kids off to Little League Baseball without teaching them how to hold a bat and catch a ball and throw a ball. We'd give them the basics.
Sure.
Because we wouldn't want them to be embarrassed.
Yep.
And yet we let our employees go into meetings or run meetings without any training. It's ludicrous.
And that makes sense. And, you know, I guess that ends up being the last part of what people ever really think about if they do think about it.
Yeah.
What, let's see here. So what does, the typical meeting, say, you know, for an entrepreneur and their employees look like it, from a time frame perspective to I know you talked about having the purpose, the outcomes, the agenda and everything else in that meeting. But from, I guess, from a time frame standpoint, and then as well as what typical results do you expect from those meetings?
So it's really meeting specific. You have a certain type of meeting for certain things. You don't have an employee meeting or a staff meeting.
Okay.
So your planning meeting, your annual planning meeting is really to come up with the core goals for the year or the quarter and come up with the plans or the projects that you're going to put in place and get everybody to sign off on those projects. So that now we agree on this is what we're going to do to make this happen. So your quarterly and annual planning meetings, you come up with your revenue goal, your profit goal, your customer and employee engagement goals, your strategic initiatives, and then the projects to make them happen. So those meetings are just to do that.
Okay.
Then you have a meeting that's only about your financial statements. Once a month for 1 hour, you review your financial statements with all your employees or your management team. You go through every line item in the P&L and the balance sheet, and you talk about what you're going to change next month. So that's just financial statements.
Okay.
Then you have a meeting once a month just to talk about blue sky strategy, just stuff that might be coming down the pipe. No decisions, but just lots of brainstorming around where you might be a year from now. It's talking about stuff on the calendar at least a year out.
Okay.
And so that's just strategy. Then you have your daily huddle. Your daily huddle is an all-company 7-minute stand-up meeting, and that's really where your employees are actually sharing good news, going through the key sales funnel numbers, having one business area do an update, and then coming up with any missing systems or frustrations that you need to fix. So it's just that daily pulse, 7 minutes. It's usually held at 11 o'clock or 2 o'clock, which are times in the day where the energy level drops.
Right.
And it, again, it's purely for that purpose of getting the energy going and getting alignment. And then your last meeting is really your one-on-one meetings where you're actually coaching your employees. So you're coaching your VPs, they're coaching the frontline staff, and that's just a balance of direction, development, and support. So you can see that each meeting is a completely different purpose and outcomes.
And definitely, and I know one of the meetings you mentioned was the financial. And I remember reading, I think, in your book too as well, you actually bring the employees into the financial meeting and hold them accountable kind of for their department and their areas.
Yeah, I don't hold them accountable. I hire accountable people. But what I want to do is I want to give them visibility to the numbers so they really actually know where we are as a company. They know why decisions are being made the way they are. They know how to make decisions aligned with the numbers. You know, they understand. It's kind of like if you were playing a sport like hockey or soccer. If you can't see the goal, how are you ever going to get the puck or the ball in the goal?
Right.
And if employees can't see the financials, they all think you're making more money than you are because they don't understand all the expenses. The reality is you might as well show them where you really are so that then they can help you figure out how to do better.
Awesome. And no, and I think that's a great way to end. So, tell me one thing. What was one technology device that you can't live without these days?
Oh, something that is the iPhone. I mean, clearly, right? Let's see, is my Tesla. I just love it. one technology device. I'm using an app right now called Commit to Three. That's very powerful. So I set my daily business goals every day with Joe Polish, and he gives me his top three and I give him my top three. So we commit our top three goals to each other every day. And then I commit my top three personal goals to a guy named Gordy Buffton, and he commits his top three personal to me. So that very simple app that integrates with nothing, it's purely commitment of goals to someone else and them to you. You can do it with your groups externally. Just a really powerful tool that's really helping me propel my business.
No, that's awesome. I think that's amazing too, is you have, you know, different people that are holding you accountable for different areas of your goals.
Well, they're not even so much holding me accountable because we don't check in, but I feel the guilt of having committed it to them.
Making that commitment to them.
Yeah, when you share your goal with somebody else, and there's a bit more buy-in to that because you realize like you have to make it happen because I put it in writing.
Cool. No, that's awesome. It's an honor to have you on Making Bank today, and I really think we got some really awesome information, some really golden nuggets for our audience out there, and I really appreciate your time coming on today.
Oh, you're welcome, Josh. Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. I am Josh Felber, and you were watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Making Bank is also available for download on iTunes and Stitcher.